This is the Breaker.News podcast for August 5th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, regular features like the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines about the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, headlines about the Pacific Northwest, The Big Deal feature. The countdown is 10 weeks until the October 20th civic election in Vancouver. And I'll have the first of the Breaker.News podcast's irregular series of interviews with candidates, this time Colleen Hardwick of the NPA. And I will award a special British Columbia Day weekend virtual Nanaimo bar to a special group of people. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is Premier John Horgan and his NDP government inconsistent when it comes to dealing with waste and corruption left over by the BC Liberals? The scathing report on casino money laundering by UBC professor Peter German helped derail former Deputy Premier Rich Coleman's plan to run for mayor of Surrey. The report was released at the end of June at a news conference where both German and Attorney General David Eby spent extra time to take questions. Contrast that with the review of the cost overruns for the Portman Bridge, a $3.3 billion project that cost more than half $1 billion than planned. After whistleblowers came forward to CBC last summer, Transportation Minister Claire Trevena ordered a review. She was never transparent about who would conduct the review and what the terms of reference would be. Her staff only said it would be completed by spring. It was finally released August 1st to the Breaker under Freedom of Information. There was no news conference or even a news release. The report should actually have been delivered to me on July 3rd, but the NDP waited until August 1st. It turns out the Finance Ministry had hired consultancy Perrin Thorau, which had billed the BC government for $5.4 million of contracts since 1999. Nobody was really named or shamed, and the whistleblowers weren't even interviewed. The report said the government could have done a better job, but it also got lucky, because the drop in interest rates meant Cabinet was not asked for another $260 million. BC Liberal donor KPMG got millions of dollars in no-bid contracts, but the name of the person who gave KPMG the ride on the gravy train is nowhere to be found. Dermot Travis of Integrity BC called the report a mile wide and an inch deep. Many voters chose the NDP in 2017, or their junior partner, the Greens, because of BC Liberal waste and corruption. The voters wanted integrity, but are instead getting inconsistency. What do you think? Email me, bob@thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Neil Fraser and Phila Xu report, China tells consulates in Hong Kong and Macau to use only one city in official title. Beijing has asked foreign diplomatic missions, which serve both Hong Kong and Macau from a single consulate, to remove the name of the city, which is not their main base, from their official title. Consular corps have been left scratching their heads over what the rationale for the request might be. Hong Kong has 62 consulates general and 58 honorary consulates, while Macau has 4 and 8 respectively. In May, Beijing demanded international airlines change by July 25th the way they refer to Taiwan on their websites if it might imply the island was not part of China. 4 U.S. carriers, American Airlines, Delta Airlines, United Airlines, and Hawaiian Airlines, missed the deadline. In the New Zealand Herald, Sam Hurley reports, banker, lawyer, and wife of a guilty property developer sentenced over $54 million mortgage fraud. Lawyer Gang Richard Chen, Kang Chu, also known as Yan Jenny Zhang, and former BNZ banker Zong Lian Charlie Zhang appeared for sentencing in the High Court at Auckland before Justice Sarah Katz. Justice Katz sentenced Chen to a total of 6 years imprisonment, Zhang to 4 years and 9 months behind bars, and Chu to 12 months home detention for their premeditated and prolonged fraud. The trio were part of a quartet charged by the Serious Fraud Office over 76 Auckland and Hamilton properties and suspicious mortgages involving 57 loan applications and 110 transactions. The scheme involved loans of more than $54 million and bribes of $7,000 per transaction to the two bankers, Jiang and former ANZ banker Peter Cheng, who approved the loans. Jiang processed and approved about $18 million in loan applications in exchange for cash bribes. And in the San Diego Union-Tribune, Peter Rowe reports, at one of San Diego's oldest strip clubs, the Rock Church takes over. In that Midway District landmark, generations of dancers had taken it off, taken it all off, from 1964 until it closed in late 2017. In June, the Point Loma megachurch and several outside investors bought the property and its adult entertainment permit for $1.2 million. The rise of internet porn and the closure of the nearby Naval Training Center coincided with a steady decline in body shop business. While Lay Girls is still alive and stripping, the Rock Church has expressed interest in buying it with the goal of shutting it down. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker.News podcast brings you Sounds of Summer. This is Gary Chalk and the Kitts Point All-Stars live at the Kitsilano Showboat on August 1st.
Yeah, baby! Why don't you treat me right?
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling, where we look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Seattle Times, Daniel Beekman reports, to lobby for public money, Mariners called on former Constantine advisor. The Seattle Mariners began asking for $180 million from King County for upgrades to Safeco Field, seeking a portion of the county's hotel-motel tax revenue as part of a 25-year lease extension at the ballpark. The team hired Joe Woods, who is King County executive Dow Constantine's former deputy chief of staff and longtime senior aide, to lobby Constantine and the county council. The Mariners paid $15,000 for Woods' services. Many governments have revolving door laws that limit immediate lobbying by former legislators and other employees. Woods broke no such law. In the Seattle PI, Daniel DeMay reports, contractors picked, new design details, $700 million rebuild of Seattle's key arena marches forward. A joint venture between Skanska and Acom Hunt will oversee a project that officials called complicated and expensive, and that will utilize new excavation techniques to minimize the impact to the surrounding neighborhood, said Tim Lewecki, CEO of Oakview Group, the firm behind the renovation and plans for an NHL team aimed at the 2020 season. Contractors will dig down another 15 feet and expand the space below ground all the way out to the inner edge of the outside perimeter, where the massive roof supports hit the ground now. Once it's complete, people will enter the arena on the upper concourse and have to go down to get to lower levels. Contractor partner Acom Hunt has built 13 NHL and 14 NBA venues. In Nanaimo News Now, Dominic Abassi reports, deeply troubling, Privacy Commissioner finds multiple Nanaimo City Hall breaches illegal. Investigators were only able to determine who was responsible for one of the three releases of private information. Three complaints were filed by city privacy head Sheila Gurry and were rolled into one investigation. The leak of a labor lawyer's report into complaints by the former chief administrator, the leak of confidential email by Mayor Bill McKay to a consultant, and the posting of legal letters about one city councillor on another councillor's Facebook page. The latter was the only conclusive case. Commissioner Michael McAvoy said Councillor Gord Fuller is experienced and knows that in-camera documents are not to be distributed beyond the council chamber, even if they are not marked confidential. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Behind closed doors, candidate for mayor Ken Sim and the board of the Nonpartisan Association chose six new candidates for city council in the October 20th civic election. The Breaker was first to report who they were on July 30th. One of them is Colleen Hardwick, a former Hollywood North film producer who runs PlaySpeak.com, a digital platform to consult citizens that balances transparency with privacy. She is the daughter of Walter Hardwick, the late UBC geography professor who co-founded the Team Party and sat on city council from 1969 to 1974. It will be her second run for council after falling short by 3,300 votes in 2005. I caught up with Colleen last week in Kitts Point and asked her about what needs to be done to turn the city around after 9 years under Vision Vancouver and Mayor Gregor Robertson. What needs to be discussed and debated and solved with this election?
Well, this is a change election, there's no doubt about it. And 2008 was really a change election, so it's been a full decade since we've had any quantum change in leadership at the city. You'll remember that 2008 was notorious for something else, and that was the financial crash in the United States, but there's no doubt that it had an effect in Canada, and no doubt that it had an effect on our local economy as well. But I like to look at that period from 2008 to 2018 and think about where we're sitting now, and are we happy with the city as it has been, as it has evolved over this last decade? And I think there's a lot of unhappy people out there. I think there's going to be more attention paid to this election as a result. You talk to the people that are lifelong Vancouverites, they feel that they are not at home in their own hometown anymore. And similarly, you talk to people that are new to the city, and they feel alienated and disconnected. So I think the biggest challenge in this election is getting back to first principles and thinking about where we want to be going in the future of our city.
This is a very expensive city for a number of economic reasons, foreign money coming in here, demand to live here. It's also an expensive city because City Hall made it that way, raising taxes and spending over the last 9 years on projects that Vision Vancouver wanted to spend on. What needs to be done for City Hall finances?
Well, my message would be press pause. We cannot continue to have the spending trajectory that we've been placed on over the last decade. And I think we have to take a really deep dive and think about what we're doing as a city. I like to remind people that when we think of the city of Vancouver, we're talking about 115 square kilometers from Boundary Road West. That's all she wrote. And under the Vancouver Charter, the obligation of the city is to provide services for the residents and businesses within that 115 square kilometers. And that is funded through a variety of land taxes attributable to that 115 square kilometers. And what I'm afraid that we've seen is an outstripping of that paradigm. We've seen spending going on that really should be happening and is happening at the senior levels of government. So again, I think we have to take a step back and go, okay, well, what is the city really supposed to be doing here? And it starts with providing services. And you hear a lot about people saying that, you know, the city's a mess, the garbage isn't being cleaned up, the basic maintenance, the roads, the sewers, the nuts and bolts of the city are not being taken care of. But at the same time, we're seeing money spent on projects that cost a lot of money, that have been described as vanity projects. So what I think is, again, absolutely essential at this point in time is, as I say, to press pause, let's have a review of where we're sitting. How are we balancing that budget? I mean, once upon a time, we did actually look to balance budgets, and we did have a really detailed understanding of the financial well-being of the city. And from that, all the rest of it filters out. The housing issues, the transportation issues, the social issues, the community issues, and so on and so forth. But it does come back to the central balance that I think is I think we're out of balance in the city, and the people feel it intuitively.
Yeah, this is a city, of course, that is relatively small compared to other cities. It's really Fraser River to Burrard Inlet and Point Grey to Boundary Road. Yet we've had a mayor who's been more concerned about the world. The next mayor of Vancouver really has to stay in Vancouver more and pay attention more to Vancouver issues.
Well, I agree with that. But I think this has been enabled because most people don't really understand the difference between levels of government. The people that are policy wonks and people that live in politics, they understand. But regular people on the street, they don't know the difference between what local government does to provincial government, to federal government. They just take it all for granted and blur it together. And that lack of knowledge and that lack of civic knowledge, I think, has enabled a lot of what we've seen happening with the current regime adopting areas of activity that really belong to the senior levels of government. So I would like to see a step back to pressing pause, looking at where we're sitting in the city. What are the things that we need to make the city, again, within that 115 square kilometers, livable for the people that live here? They're the ones that are, after all, footing the bill, paying the taxes for the nuts and bolts, street-level stuff that the city needs to do. So I'm not dismissing the importance of what's going on in the world. We all want to, the planet to survive. I don't think anybody's arguing with the merits of the underlying values. But what they're struggling with is how do I pay my rent, pay my mortgage, pay my utilities, and be able to live in the city that we love. And people are struggling with that. And I really do think that we need to be more focused on the city as the core of the region. Yes, the city within, its place in the planet, but still that 115 square kilometers from Boundary Road West.
There'll be a lot of talk as the weeks go by, as the clock counts down till October 20th, about the legacy of Gregor Robertson. Here's someone who came into power promising to make City Hall more open and accountable. He even used the words, "I will not let you down." Instead, it is not accountable. It is not open. It's very expensive. Last year, they spent about $2.6 million on 43 people in communications. This year, they're projected to spend almost $3.3 million.
We have to differentiate between public consultation and marketing and communications, for starters. I think what has evolved has been a department which has, obviously proliferated in headcount, that is really a marketing and communications hub in the mold of what you would see in the private sector, certainly. But what it is not is public consultation. We're using market research technology as underneath Talk Vancouver, for example, which is opaque. It lacks the necessary transparency for people to see that the feedback that they're contributing is actually having an effect on the outcome. And this is a profound problem, not only in the city of Vancouver, but across government. I'm not suggesting that it's limited to Vancouver. But the approach that has been taken is we're going to listen to you. We say we're listening to you, but when you get to the end of that feedback loop and they say what we just heard, it bears no resemblance. In democratic theory, the way it's supposed to work in any kind of public discourse is we consult with the people to gather their feedback to influence our deliberation and ultimately our outcomes, whether those are decisions or policies. But the problem with these guys has been that the decisions are foregone conclusions, in many cases ideologically driven. And so the consultation becomes a marketing exercise. And the problem is that everybody knows it, and nobody trusts them as a result. So, I have been advocating for some time for transparent, open consultations that are, geospatial, but privacy protecting, because we want to know that we're really hearing from Vancouverites and not from people, outside the city or the province when it comes to making decisions very specifically about the city. Now, we used to be able to do things. I'll give you an example. Where I live, we have some traffic circles in the neighborhood. And we had those there because we went to the city as a neighborhood and said, we have a real problem with traffic calming. And at that time, the city gave us a list of homeowners within a range of addresses, and we had to go door to door, knocking on people's doors and getting their signatures. And if we got a two-thirds majority, then we got the improvement in the form of traffic circles into the neighborhood. That involved public consultation, old school, signing signatures, getting signatures checked. contrast that with a decision is made in council on a Tuesday and the bulldozers show up Wednesday night or Wednesday morning. That is not public consultation. If anything, they'll do a bunch of spin and a bunch of marketing speak around it, but they have made a decision from the top down that they are imposing rather than listening to the bottom up, which is what grassroots and public consultation is about.
That was my interview with PlacePeak.com CEO Colleen Hardwick, who is running for city council with the NPA in the October 20th civic election. Listen to the Breaker.News podcast on the way to the election for interviews with candidates from across the spectrum. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to British Columbians, all 4.7 million of you. On August 2nd, it was the 160th anniversary of the British Parliament passing the law in 1858 that created the government in the colony of British Columbia. August 6th is the 152nd anniversary of the 1866 law that united Vancouver Island with the mainland. So, enjoy your British Columbia Day holiday. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. More sounds of summer from Gary Chalk and the Kitts Point All-Stars live at the Kitsilano Showboat on August 1st. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for August 5th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on August 5th in 1962, blonde bombshell Marilyn Monroe was found dead in her Los Angeles home? She was 36. And anti-apartheid leader Nelson Mandela was arrested in South Africa. He was finally freed in 1990. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.